I'm Ken MacLeod. From the day we launched unfetteredmind.org, it has operated without a paywall, advertising, or a subscription charge. This is only possible through the generosity of people like you. If you find our materials useful, please make a donation at unfetteredmind.org/donate. Thank you, and enjoy this podcast.
Unfettered Mind, Stalking Death, Part 2.
All of samsara and nirvana has one ground, two paths, and two results. Everything is the expression of awareness and ignorance. There is false duality, and there is a true duality. The false duality, or I should say the false dualities, take various forms. The most common form, and arguably the one that causes the most suffering in the world, is the duality of good versus evil. It is a false duality. The only result of good versus evil, or the eventual result of good versus evil, is war, always. It can be internal, it can be external, but it's always war. That kind of polarization has never produced any good result in the course of history. One of the roles that Buddhism has played politically within countries in Asia and in the 20th century, to some extent outside of Asia, through such personages as U Thant, who was the first Secretary General of the United Nations, Thich Nhat Hanh, and most notably perhaps the Dalai Lama. Such people made a point of conducting conversations out of the public eye with various world leaders and influential people, moving them away from the view of good versus evil. Another false duality, one which is actually the cause of suffering itself, is what we discussed to some extent this morning, and that is I, other. another duality which is, in a certain sense, both false and true. That's a very Buddhist way of looking at it. Is knowing versus not knowing. I'll say a bit more about that this afternoon, right now. The true duality is appearance and emptiness. However, it is only an apparent duality because we have from the Heart Sutra, form is emptiness, emptiness is form. Other than emptiness, there is no form. Other than form, there is no emptiness. So even though appearance or form and emptiness appear different, they are one and the same. Yes.
This is something that I was thinking about in the earlier lecture when you were saying that there's nothing that doesn't change. And I thought, well, emptiness is, you know, it's always emptiness. And now you're saying, well, and of course, I've heard the saying, emptiness is form. Yeah.
Let's see how things unfold. Okay? And if they don't unfold in a way that's satisfactory, then you can take your question up again. Okay. So, this opening lines to this prayer. It's kind of a strange opening to a prayer, isn't it? All that appears and exists, all of samsara and nirvana, has one ground, two paths, and two results. Everything is the expression of awareness and ignorance. Awareness and ignorance could also be translated as knowing and not knowing. So, what's being said here is that all experience is the expression of knowing and not knowing. Those are the two paths, the path of knowing and the path of not knowing. The path of knowing is freedom, nirvana, etc., etc., etc. Path of not knowing is fettering by reactivity, reactive emotions, samsara. Cycle of pattern-based existence. But you have this other phrase in there, one ground. The point of practice is to know that this is so through one's own direct experience. Then you know that the duality of good versus evil is false and problematic. You know that the duality of I and other is simply a misperception. You know that everything you experience is an expression of knowing or not knowing. In other words, you know how things are, and you know what you are. Now you might ask, what does this all have to do with impermanence and change in the way that we were talking about it this morning, in the way that you practiced? Well, when you think of change in the world that we experience as outside us, which is the world of sensory objects, we see all of the change taking place. What changes? This question is captured in a koan from the Zen tradition. Two monks observed a flag flapping in the wind. One monk was arguing that the flag moved. The other was arguing that it was the wind that moved. Who was right? What moves? No, they were standing there. Their awareness moved. That's interesting. Anybody else? That just moves the problem into the area of chemistry and things like that. It doesn't change. So you have changing patterns on the retina. But so now you have, is it the cones that move or is it the electrical signals that move, right? So just
ask the question.
Who is right? Is it the flag that moves or the wind moves? Junior?
First they experience the flag being in one place, then they experience the flag being in another place.
That's true. Well, let's go back. Remember I asked you, when you looked at this, where is the seeing? Okay? Here they're observing a flag that is flapping in the wind. Where is the seeing? It's hard to say, right? But would you agree that the movement is in the seeing?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. It's in the seeing itself. Now, where is that?
Martha. I saw you shaking your heads. It's hard to say, isn't it? Now, just hold the question. Where is the seeing? What happens when you do that? Anybody?
I feel like you move outside down to what you're prescribed with your own self senses.
Mm-hmm.
The sense of self is.
Okay, there's the shift.
It doesn't matter.
There's a shift of some kind.
There's a shift.
Anybody else?
It seems like the answer is not in the mind. The mind doesn't, it can't hold the answer, so.
Mm-hmm. What if you stop before you get to that? No, that's what you're teetering into when the mind can't hold the answer. But what if you just rest in the experience of the question? What happens there?
Everything changes.
What changes? Everything. Describe the change. As best you can.
The gap between the question and the experience.
Yes, describe the gap.
It's fluttering in the wind.
Describe the gap, Pat.
It's just different from where you were. You just were.
Yeah, okay. Again, there's a shift, right? Now that shift is just a little one, but it's a movement out of subject-object framework. It's a shift, it can be described in a lot of different ways, into just being. As you say, everything changes. But when you try to put your finger on it, it's very hard to say what changed, right? Is that fair? So, when you consider the question of change, the world around you, all of the changes, flag fluttering in the wind, leaves falling to the ground, sun rising, whatever, and you go into the actual experience of change, you experience a shift. What about the body? Does the body change? Groans of yes. If they're a bunch of teenagers, they wouldn't be groans, they would say, yes! But at this point, it's usually more groans. Now, where do those changes take place? It's the same question as about the flag and the wind, isn't it? Are all the changes taking place in the body? Or being caused by various things, just as the flag and the wind? But really, they're changes in our experience. Where's that?
What is that?
Where? Where is it?
But what is that, our experience?
Yes. Where is it? Now, when you ask that question with respect to your body, what happens? Jessica?
Just had a brief moment of the body disappearing.
Mm-hmm. And what was there?
I want to say nothing, but it wasn't nothing. It was just, I don't know what word to use.
And did your relationship or view of the body change?
Yeah, for a nanosecond.
And how did it change?
There was no viewing the body as other, separate. I mean, it was just, I was having an experience of whatever that moment was. It was nothing to do with the body, really, all of a sudden.
Yeah, so stop viewing the body as other. There was just experience.
Right.
Anybody else?
Yeah. I was reflecting on this today when we were doing meditation, and it feels most times to me like the body is a container, but when you have that little shift, it becomes a permeable thing as opposed to a rigid enclosing thing.
That's right. It does, doesn't it? It loses its... substantiality. Yeah.
What was the question you posed about that? That I totally spaced on already?
When you consider the experience of change with respect to your body, where, and ask the question, where is that experience? There's a shift. No. The hidden world. Thoughts, feelings, values, beliefs, perspectives. Things which you know do change, but we generally feel don't change. Very consistent, you know. Where are they? What happens when you ask that question? Tom?
Well, I just had a flash sensation of falling.
Mm-hmm. Anybody else? Peggy. They don't have meaning, or as a solid, they don't aren't as solid as they were. Yes. How does that feel?
Freeing, scary, but freeing.
Scaring, but freeing. Yes. So, when we consider where the experience of each of these worlds, the outer world, the inner world of the body, the outer world of sensory objects, the inner world of the body, and the hidden world of values, beliefs, and so forth, where the experience of each of those worlds is, we experience a shift. And in each case, that shift is out of subject-object. It is out of corporality. It's out of solidity or fixation. Is that fair? Now, this is a little more difficult. What is the shift into?
I know the answer, but I don't know why I'm saying it. I think the answer is direct experience, but I can't tell you why I'm saying it.
Maybe it's not necessary for you to tell me why. That's your answer. Perhaps you do. But you don't understand it with your intellect. Which may or may not be necessary. But there is some understanding there. Otherwise, you wouldn't have got there. Right? Direct experience. It's to shift into direct experience. Anybody else? Yes.
The ability to move forward and backwards.
Freedom from restraints. Yes. Anybody else? Julia?
Yeah, it seems like an experience of almost stepping out of one's body. Mm-hmm. Sort of just any sense of substantiality. Just kind of
yeah, that's out of. What are you stepping into? Pardon?
An unconfined space.
Okay. Is that what you actually experience? You experience an awareness of non-duality?
What I experience is not feeling that, let's say, in hidden, that the idea is out there.
Yeah, that's right. One experiences non-duality. It just moves there. Now, you've described it in different ways. Helena describes it as totality, basically. Dave describes it as direct experience. Peggy describes it as non-duality. You've all heard these terms many, many times. And we generally regard them as a very big deal. Well, they are, and they aren't. Part of the purpose here is to show you that these are not remote, distant concepts or experiences which you have to journey far and wide internally or externally. They're actually right here right now, if you know what kind of effort to make. Now, this is again a little more difficult question. Where does that experience of non-duality, totality, directness, whatever you want to call it, where does it come from?
Being fully present.
That's how it comes, but where does it come from? Pardon? That's how it comes again. Where does it come from?
It arises from emptiness.
Now you're in trouble, Robert. You've introduced this term. Where's emptiness? So this direct experience comes from nowhere. Okay? Where is it right now? Is it there?
Yeah.
Right, that little dot in the carpet? Is it?
Yeah.
And you know it?
Absolutely.
How can you know it if it's there?
Because it is there and I know it.
But there's no connection.
With what?
No, this is here. See, you can't even see it now. How can you know it if it is here?
I guess it's an interior knowing, understanding that.
If it's an interior knowing, is it? So it's in you.
No, it's not in me. It's everywhere. Innate in life.
Yeah, this is a concept, okay? And we like concepts. They give us the illusion that we know what we're talking about. Okay. Yes, it's a bit like the honey on a razor blade. Tastes very sweet. Yes. You get the point?
That's how you learn.
Okay. Where is the experience, that direct experience? Where is that non-duality, etc.? Where is it? Can you say where it is? No, can't. Where does it go?
Can't say that either.
Ah, see, she only licked that blade once. Okay. Does it change? Does that experience of totality, directness, non-duality, change?
Well, for the observer.
She does want to go back to those razor blades, doesn't she?
But you see your point. I mean, you know, if it's total, how can something total change?
It does come and go.
Where does silence come? Rise, seize, and fall.
But it's always there, whether we perceive it or not.
Yeah. So, what everybody says is true. It comes and goes in our experience. But that is more like the sun disappearing behind clouds. The sun doesn't actually go away. Light's blocked. It doesn't go anywhere because there isn't anywhere for it to go, remember?
Okay.
There is a story about this, which I probably shouldn't tell, but I will anyway. A Zen priest was hungry, wandering around the streets of New York. So he thought he'd have a hot dog. And he went to one of the hot dog vendors and said, "I'd like a hot dog." And the vendor said, "How would you like that?" He said, "Make me one with everything." So the vendor took out a hot dog and put on onions and relish and mustard and chili and cheese and, you know. Zen priest gave him $20. Vendor took it. After a few minutes, the Zen priest said, "What about the change?" And the vendor looked at him and said, "When you're one with everything, there's no change." I knew I shouldn't have told it. Now, what I want you to do in your... Pardon?
Said we paid for this.
No... You haven't begun to pay yet, Harry. Now, in your practice, I want you to work at opening to the totality of change in all three worlds. When you open to the totality of change, you may experience a shift. A shift into just experiencing. Because when you open to that totality, you have the field of sensory experience, you have the field of the body, you have field of all of the values, beliefs, emotions, etc. Everything changes. Everything in that is changing. But the fact that it is changing, and when you are open to it, brings out an awareness. An awareness which is your human heritage, which is always there, always present in all experience, but most of the time we are unaware of it. It's for some people disorienting and uncomfortable. Why? Because there's no sense of I associated with it. So there's no sense of identity, of being something. For other people, it's like coming home. Going, "Oh, where have I been?" Like waking up from a bad dream. When we wake up from the dream doesn't stop. It would be more accurate to say we wake into the dream. The dream continues, but now we know it's a dream. And here, you open to the totality of your experience, all that change, and you move into just experiencing. And now you know something about everything that you experience, which we are usually too caught up to know or let in. That everything that we experience is just an experience. None of it is good or bad. False duality, good or evil. I and other are misperceptions through which we try to organize our experience in a certain way, but that's organized around an identity which we see has no basis in experience. So what I want you to work on in your practice this evening is using the meditation on change. Everything changes. Nothing stays the same. Sensory experience, body, values, beliefs, worldviews, etc. Everything changes. To move into just experiencing. Now you know that whatever arises in your life, it is just experience, which is to say, what is life? Life is what you experience. What you experience is your life. That's it. Everything else is a construction and an abstraction from that. And when we take those constructions and those abstractions to be real or have meaning in and of themselves, that's when suffering begins. That's how suffering arises. One of the things I do is work with a number of Buddhist teachers in a quasi-mentoring role. And a couple of weeks ago I happened to just happened that I ended up having conversations with three teachers all in the same week about difficulties they were encountering in their teaching, or questions anyway. And it was interesting. Even though the questions and the difficulties that each of them was encountering were very different, the cause of the question and the problem in all three cases was exactly the same. They were concerned with their identity. And because they were concerned with our identity, which is an abstraction, it's a construct, from our experience. They moved out of presence. They moved out of just being there. And that was creating the problems for them in their teaching. Now, it just happened to fall all in 1 week, so it kind of stuck in my mind. But that's actually what causes most of the problems in the world. People are attached. If you view it in terms of good and evil, you will act out of anger. If you open to the experience and experience it directly, action arises which doesn't arise from anger. And what that action will be for each individual, I can't say. But if you recall the tapes from the 9/11 plane that went down in Pennsylvania, the way those conversations come across, the passengers who decided to take on the hijackers, they weren't coming out of anger. They said, this is what needs to happen, and they just did it. That's very different. Jonica, you had a question? This is very difficult. You raise a very challenging situation, Dave. But yes, this is not about inaction. This is about actually being there. And being totally present doesn't mean that one's passive or inactive in a situation. It does mean that what moves action comes out of awareness, not out of reaction.
Gandhi was assassinated. I think he was saying something of forgiveness to his assassin,
yes. Gandhi understood this kind of thing very deeply. After the riots in Calcutta, a Hindu man came to Gandhi and said, my child was killed by Muslims in the riot. I hate them. What do I do? I've lost my son. And Gandhi said to him, go through the streets and find a child whose parents have been killed. There are lots of them. And raise him as your own son. And the Hindu man brightened up at this prospect. And then Gandhi said, but make sure that he is a Muslim child and raise him as a Muslim. Non-duality. That's how the cycle of hatred and good and evil and us, them, etc., that's how it is brought to an end. And Gandhi understood this very deeply. And that's a very practical application. Okay, other questions? Michelle.
If there is no absolute good and evil at any level, how does one maintain a sense of ethics?
June 26th. All about that. Exactly that question. It's more than I want to go into here. But very simply, do the practice as I've suggested. And if you're able to come to a place of just being, just experiencing, then think of a situation, an ethical situation, an ethical dilemma, which I imagine you've encountered one or two in your life. And go into it from there. See what happens. See for yourself. This is not a theoretical a question that is answered well in theory, because it's very much about direct experience. And the direct experience is, you know. Peggy.
What David said about the plane going down reminds me that it seems I've heard a lot of stories that are, for example, in the news called heroism, where people act in just that way when faced with a situation.
Yeah.
Whether there's a judgment somewhere along the way, it seems to drop away, and then there's just the action that is, you know, life-saving, you know, what we label as heroic. And it strikes me that that in that moment, it's what you have called, you know, dying to something.
Yes. I can't speak for those individuals, but in many cases, it does involve a kind of dying. Dying to what other people expect of you, dying sometimes to what you expect of yourself or what you considered right, because one just sees. I think compassion plays a very, very important role here. I was engaged in some conversations a while ago about the question, why fuller question, in Japan, for instance, there were a lot of Zen priests, quite highly placed Zen teachers, who supported the Japanese war effort. Very unambiguously. There's a book by a guy called Brian Victoria called Zen at War, which examines this. And it's quite disturbing reading, because you have Zen teachers expressing attitudes which are very similar to Christian bishops in the Crusades. You know, kill the infidels. We are the instruments of God. We are the instruments of karma, etc., etc. This kind of nonsense. So, one of the questions I was mulling over, what is the quality that enables a person who is raised within a culture to question the cultural assumptions in which they were raised? And I came to the conclusion that it's not insight, it's compassion. Because compassion puts you directly in touch with the suffering that is present in the inequities that the culture itself creates. So one just says, this is wrong. It's a direct knowing that comes through compassion. It doesn't really come through insight. And it's because of the connection with suffering. Okay? One more question, then we'll break for dinner. Oh, no, we should stop now because we have to do...
Well, I've already told them we're going to be about 10 minutes.
Well, thank you, but we're here. Are you clear about practice for this evening? We're going to be rolling through practices quite quickly during this retreat. So. That's your practice, to open to the totality of change. And be in that experience.
And do you have any hints on how to go from mindfulness into that?
Yes. To go from mindfulness into that, Start with the meditations, just as they are, just as we discussed this morning. So you have change in the world around you. And this is more about opening to all of the change. So you can go through all the different categories, you know, galaxies and microorganisms and trees and rocks and everything, buildings, fashions, cities, the whole bit. And you just open and let yourself open to all of that change. Now there's going to be emotional stuff that arises when you do that, like, I can't handle all of this. But that's an emotional reaction to it. And you just sit with that emotional reaction until you can be in that experience. And I think you'll find there's a shift that takes place when you do that. Then you rest in that shift. And if you lose it, then you come back, go through the same process. And then you do the same thing with the body. Then you do the same thing with all the internal stuff. And then you do it with all three. That help? Any questions? That didn't help, but you have no questions? Okay. Rami?
Yeah. Just wanted to be clear. You said use meditation on change. It's just what we did exactly this morning, or is there something you said refer to the book?
No, just this stuff, yeah.
Okay. But what you said, sorry, I guess what threw me off, you said everything changes, nothing stays the same. Use that as the opening.
Yeah, you just keep opening that. Everything in experience changes. And you just keep opening and opening and opening to all of that change.
Whatever.
Yeah, but you open to all of it. Not one piece here, one piece here, one piece here. All of it. So you have to include everything to do that. Perry?
I wanted another word besides open.
Which word would you like? Okay.
Release.
Allow. Let go.
Surrender.
Are they working for you?
How about breathe into? How you breathe
into your body.
Don't flinch. Okay, Johnny King. George.
Unfettered Mind retains all rights to these podcasts. If you wish to use part or a whole podcast, please send an email to podcasts@unfetteredmind.org.